Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is a tropical hot dog night with Dave Lefkowitz here on AM 1240 WGBB in Freeport, New York, here with the 185th episode of Dave's Gone By. There goes the Daverhood, ladies and gentlemen. And we've got an amazing show, a very, very full show for you tonight. First of all, let me introduce, he's not going to have that much to do, unfortunately, tonight, but he is here with me. I'm happy to introduce my friend Jeff Goodman. Jeff, how you doing?
Does that mean I don't get paid?
No. I have to pay you.
I remember my 185th episode.
Do you really? Yeah.
Yes.
What was it like?
It was diarrhea.
Thank you very much. Thanks for bringing... it normally takes me at least 10 minutes to bring the level of the show down to the toilet, but you did that in about 45 seconds.
Well, that's because your wife won't let me burp anymore.
Oh, Jeff, please do. Please. Thank you very much. See,
sorry.
I gotta get all this really good stuff out of the way in the first 5 minutes, because there's even better stuff coming in the rest of the show. Let me tell folks what this program is.
Hey, what's on the show today?
Tonight, leading into tomorrow, is, first of all, going to be talking to a fella who has been back and forth and back and forth and back and forth to Cuba 40 times in the last 10 years. He went once on a photographic assignment.
And once on a photographic
assignment. He just went around and around. and he just fell in love with the place and documented it. And not just sort of, I mean, the people and the culture of it. And he went to a couple of interesting ceremonies that we'll hear about. His name is Jack Kenny, and he put out a book of photographs of Cuba. So he's going to be talking about the book, but more about his experiences there, because it is this culture that, at least if you're like me, growing up, it was always sort of forbidden and evil and Castro bad, and we can never get there. And then in later years, it was sort of like, well, it's dilapidated and
there was
awful.
That little kid on the raft.
And then there was Elian Gonzalez, of course. And now, a couple of weeks ago, with the Castro scare, we go, all right, that's it. Everybody's going to be flooding
in. They buried them in Florida. they actually had little coffins down the street. They were like,
he's like Jimmy Hoffa. We won't know he's actually dead for another 5 years, you know. But
there'll still be a cigar being puffed somewhere.
He's still apparently recuperating, but it's a matter of time. Even if his brother takes over, it's a matter of time. So I thought it would be fascinating to find out more about
Cuba.
Land and people of Cuba on this Cuba Libre edition of Dave's Gone By. That's not all that we have for you tonight.
Oh, we have a very, very special guest.
Incredibly special guest.
A guest that's very hard to get.
Yes, but...
She comes from beyond.
Yes, beyond the beyond. 10 years ago, a little girl was killed, as we all know if we've all been watching the news. We assume she was killed. Doesn't look like a suicide. She was 6 years old.
I'm going to squeal on that one because I must.
Squeal.
Woo!
Thank you very much. Yes. Kill our microphones.
Sorry.
They're okay. Jean Benet Ramsey, whom we've been hearing so much about in the news, was assumedly murdered. And the suspicion pointed to her parents, and then there was some unknown DNA. And then it became a cold case for many, many years until finally they seemed to have found the guy who did it. There's doubt. There's some speculation that his confession is full of nonsense and he's just one of these wannabe people. But at least for the moment, he is now the new prime suspect, the most
likely.
And
where do they have to find him? Thailand.
Your favorite country. Your favorite place.
But I have a theory on that, too.
Quickly,
what's my theory basically is he was in trouble with the Thai authorities anyway, because he did get in trouble from a couple of schools, and he's been after young girls for a while,
mm-hmm.
and Thailand is really cutting down on that, and you don't want to end up in a Thai jail.
So he confessed to this in order to be tried in an American system in prison.
And I just heard on the radio coming over that he's actually, right now, as we speak, he will land in L.A. about 12 o'clock our time. He's on a Thai Airways flight, which is fine with me, but I think they could have flown him American, because United does fly.
Blown up over the Atlantic.
But here's the kicker.
What?
They're flying business
class. Oh, don't kick me.
They're flying business class.
Oh, he was drinking champagne, I know.
What is that?
Nice seats. Well, yeah.
I'm in the back of the plane, and he...
Well, this is it. If you're white and you dress in a suit and a tie, that's how they'll treat you. You think about it. Well, I don't think about it. But anyway,
what does that mean?
You know, we're spending this time. I'm not interviewing Jean-Marc Carr, who is the alleged killer of JonBenet Ramsey. No. I will have an interview close to about 20 to midnight.
Maybe we get him in another date.
Someone from the spirit world, the ghost of JonBenet Ramsey. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know how we're ever going to book this. I'm so amazed.
Is Patsy coming along, too?
No, Patsy, and they're doing CNN, they're doing Larry King.
No, Patsy passed away.
Oh, you know, I should ask her about that. I should definitely ask JonBenet. I'll ask her as many questions as I can before she disappears into evanescence-ness. But so stick around. We've got Cuba. Ooh. We've got JonBenet Ramsey herself.
And she's going to disappear into what?
Into whatever.
Evanescences?
Yeah, the band. It's a boy band. She'd be interested in that now because she'd be 16. Anyway, got to thank my sponsors before we do anything else. Hewlett Minuteman Press. For the best copies, the best printing and binding, mortgagesrock.com.
Because they rock on the radio.
That's right. God bless them. And then if you want to learn about mortgages, that's the place to go.
And it's not just to get a mortgage. You can make money by getting other people mortgages.
Exactly.
Check their website.
And Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, the Bible of Broadway.
Ooh, it's a good source.
Yes. You should pray to it because it is the Bible of the theater. We have also, I want to just give a shout out to Joyce Keller, who is a radio psychic. She's been on this station for years and years. She's on Wednesday nights at 11 and is a good friend of the show, so be a good friend to her. Listen Wednesdays at 11 to Joyce Keller.
Can she talk to JonBenet?
You know, I should ask her that. On the Wednesday, we'll give her a call. We'll see if JonBenet is making the circuit and does her show, too.
I hear that she's giving exclusives just to WGBB.
There's some money under the table, but we'll discuss that later. Vic Fusco doing two shows on WGBB, Country Music in Exile and Swing City. They're on Sunday nights, I think 6 or 9 or 7 and 9. Go get WGBB.
It doesn't matter because we're on at 11.
What do I care? Well, I care because actually you can find out stuff. We just got a new WGBB website. They've finally redesigned it. It's really kind of neat, easy to use.
It's a much improved stream.
The stream is good. Just click the Listen Live button in the upper right-hand corner. And they're still working on the content of the site, but pretty soon the schedule, a revised and correct schedule, will be up. So you can see when Vic is on. And, of course, my show, Dave's Gone By, Sunday nights at 11. So,
and there will go the Weberhood.
Nicely put. So, Jeff Goodman, stick around, even though you've got some other stuff to do.
Okay, I'm not going to be talking much anymore. He's turning off my mic.
Yeah, sorry, but thank you.
Bye.
But don't go away, everybody else, because we have Jack Kenny, Cuban photographer. Well, he's a photographer who went to Cuba, an expert on Cuba, coming up right after these. Real estate's open secret is that people who own their own home are blessed with the ultimate collateral. Owning a house allows you to borrow money for home improvement, college loans, big vacations, and I'll bet you know qualified people thinking of taking out a loan for any number of reasons. So why not help them and make some money too by bringing them to MortgagesRock.com, a full-service mortgage broker that teaches you how to make dreams come true. And, of course, the more clients you have, the more you do on your own, the more commission you make. But either way, MortgagesRock.com is there for you. At the website, on the phone, in their South Shore office. Fully licensed in New York State and growing bigger every day, MortgagesRock.com will start you as a broker so you can get richer. Remember, MortgagesRock.com, because making money never sounded so good. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and one place that I've never been, but I've certainly been very curious about going to, but really never had any opportunity or the sense that an opportunity would ever arise, to go to Cuba. I mean, it's right there. I've been to Florida like 4 times, and you can sort of think you can see it across the water, but it's been so off limits, and especially in the early years of my growing up, so politically and socially off limits, that, being American, it kind of never occurred to me that it would be a place, A, I'd be able to go to, or B, that I would be allowed to. But time passes, years pass, you start talking to people who go there through other countries, and now, a couple of weeks ago, Fidel Castro had that health scare, and people were thinking suddenly, oh my God, this may open up, the whole world may change down there within a few weeks or months. But someone who's had a lot more experience and a lot more visitation there, and knows the place a heck of a lot better than, well, I do, or certainly a lot of Americans would imagine that they ever could, is Jack Kenny. Now, Jack is a photographer, and about only 10 years ago, he started wanting to photograph Cuba and went down there once, and then again, and then again, and again, and again, and just fell in love, I guess, with the people and the culture and the land, and has been down there, I think, 40 times. So, of course, getting a sense of the people, of the place, and of the politics, and I thought, especially with Cuba on the brink of changing to something else from what it's been for the past 5 or 6 decades, I think this is a perfect time to talk to photographer Jack Kenny and welcome him to Dave's Gone By. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Dave. Nice to be here.
Great. Great to have you here. Great to have you in America. How much of the time do you spend here, and how much of the time generally do you spend in Cuba?
Well, for the past 10 years, I've been going 4 to 5 times a year. Most trips are about 2 weeks. I've been a little longer a few times, but I have a business and a daughter here that I have to take care of, so I'm here more than I'm there, but I go as often as I can.
Now, when was the last time you were in Cuba?
I was there about 2 months ago, and I went down actually for my wedding. I married a Cuban woman who I've had a 6 or 7 year relationship with.
Congratulations.
And the only way she could come here was for us to get married, and we talked about it for a while, so a little change in life here.
Well, gosh, I mean, how long ago was it before when you were married?
Well, I met her early on in my travels to Cuba, but we've been a couple of sorts for 6 or 7 years. Long distance, not easy, but we decided to legitimize it.
And were there any cultural differences? Are you of Spanish origin?
No, I'm not. My first trip was just on a whim. I wanted to get away, and I had a niece that had gone to Cuba, and she told me if I ever had the opportunity that I should take it.
Mm-hmm.
A friend's son was doing a documentary film down there in 1996, and in April of 96, I took my first trip and went 3 more times that year, sort of fell in love with the place.
Now, first of all, I mean, especially that first time back in the mid-1990s when Fidel was still in reasonably decent shape, how did you go? I mean, was it legal? How did you get there?
We went up. There were a lot of people just traveling through Canada at that time, and so I went up to Canada and got on a plane and went down for a week vacation pretty much. And I met Roberto Salas, who was a famous Cuban photographer, and he had been living in New York and went to Cuba with Fidel as a 19-year-old in 1959. And we sort of bonded, and I brought back some of his work. It's always been legitimate to buy and sell art from Cuba. So I sort of got into the art business through him buying and selling photography and art, and that allowed me to keep going back and forth.
So when you come into the States, right, I mean, granted you went through Canada, and then I guess you had to go back into Canada and
right.
into the U.S., but, I mean, do you stand on the customs line forever, or they ask you 4,000 questions?
No, generally they ask me, I tell them I was in Canada, and if they don't ask me any further questions, I don't lie to them, but I don't tell them I went to Cuba. But since that time, I've had several licenses. I've traveled under university license several times, and I now travel under a general license as a publisher. I publish a website, Cuba-Photo.com, and I published the book on Corazon Press.
What is the name of the book?
The book is Cuba, Photographs by Jack Kenny. I thought up the title myself.
Well, yeah.
Pretty simple.
Very clever, very good. And before we get any further, you might as well tell us a little bit about it's a photograph book, right?
It's a photographic book, a 12-by-12 coffee table book, all black and white, 120 pages and 106 photos.
Wow.
And almost all the photo books of Cuba are color, there are pictures of old cars and architecture. So I just took the polar opposite and I do mostly people. I work on street level. I've been all over the country, so this is my look at life of an everyday Cuban in black and white. And it's been very successful. I just won an award for printing excellence and selling quite well.
And it's from Corazon Press,
right? Corazon Press, yes. Available from the publisher, if anyone's interested.
Now, the very first time, 7 years ago that you went, what was it that you did fall in love? I mean, what specifically, if you can put it into words?
Well, I don't know exactly what it was. I had been working way too much, and I had been doing studio photography, but I'd been to Mexico a bit and photographed there and through the American West, but I was just inspired by Cuba. I was inspired by the people. It was not what I expected. I expected a small island with a gray cloud over it and everybody oppressed, and instead I found this most vital of places in the world, lots of culture, lots of activity, very social.
See, Americans would have assumed that, especially 10 years ago, it was, or about 7 years ago, it was a mess.
Yeah, it was 10 years ago, actually.
Yeah, okay, 10. So, but that because there was no money and everything was embargoed, that people might have been very spirited, but they're terribly poor. They've got nothing. They're like Russia, sort of in that 70s, yeah. 80s downfall period.
Yes. Well, with the collapse of the Soviet Empire, of course, they lost their subsidy of $6 billion a year or whatever it was.
So yeah.
In the early 90s, just prior to my first trip, was the most difficult time. They called it the special period, and food was hard to come by. Things were very tight. By the time I went, things had improved slightly, and people were pretty much taken care of. At least they were covered on the basics, so there wasn't any panic in the streets.
Well, where did they supplement the income that was lost from Russia? Was it all black market?
They turned to tourism.
Oh,
reluctantly.
Okay.
That was, and tourism went from down the list to the number one. I think they do about $1 billion a year in tourism at this point. So between tourism and sugar cane and tobacco, and they'd have a lot of nickel production and other things, they've pieced together an economy again, and it's still struggling and leaves much to be desired, but at least they got out of the trouble they were in.
But is it true, I mean, now that you've been there much more recently, too, you've been going steadily over the past few years, that it's just on the brink of exploding? I mean, something over there, as soon as Castro kicks, literally...
Well,
it's going to be capitalism gone crazy.
I don't think it will, in fact. I don't think that the culture will accept it. There's 11 million people there, and they've been in this system for 50 years. And I think it will be 7 to 10 years before it will look completely different than it does now. And even then, it may not. The social structure is very strong. It has a lot of problems, obviously, no economic opportunity. But they have such a strong culture and cultural base. For instance, the aristocracy there would be artists and sports figures and people who they revere for other reasons than economic. And those people seem to be the upper class. They have a lot of the privileged class, so to speak, in a communist country.
Right, but if they're going to be building, if they've already built the infrastructure for tourism as their number one thing, once we normalize relations with them and everybody starts streaming in from Florida and then streaming up from Cuba, won't that make all the difference in the world?
Well, that infrastructure that you speak about is true, but it's true in a very, very limited area. Primarily, Varadero Beach is the big tourist area, and that's where all the money's being invested. And there's a few coastal cities where they're pretty much tourist areas only. Cubans don't even go there and not allowed to go there,
mm-hmm.
only if they work there. So it's really an isolated area. Some obviously in Havana because of the historical value. So there's a lot of economic input in Havana. But the structure itself, the water system, the electric system, the road systems are so far from being able to handle a full economy that it'll take years just to bring that up to par. You can't go in and just build a factory and have no power to run it and have, you know, there are other problems before they can get to that point. So I suspect it'll be a long change, hopefully a peaceful change. And all my friends down there, I'm concerned about him with this latest episode with Fidel.
Well, do you think it would just be his brother? Do you think he could get away with
that?
Well,
no one knows what to expect from his brother. And his brother, I think, could be a figurehead leader, but probably not the brains of the outfit, so to speak. I think Alarcón, the head of the General Assembly, is very sharp. There's Laje and Roque and a bunch of others who supposedly there's a group in power right now, even though Raúl is the figurehead. But I think he's going to be mostly a figurehead and the head of the military. And no one's sure whether he's going to, how he will turn things. He has had some good ideas about economic change that Fidel didn't want to do, so they sat on the back burner. But he actually may open things up. They do have low-level private enterprise there, and he may expand that, which would be the right thing to do.
But you don't see, like, democracy taking hold within, like, 5 years.
Well, I don't, it's, you know, the question has always been, if there was an honest election right now, would Fidel win? And to be perfectly honest with you, I don't know the answer to that. He is not unpopular in many areas. He's unpopular in some areas, mostly where tourists go, Havana, and they hear all the complaints. But if you get away from the city, most people are pretty low-key. They're rural. They're pretty content. Their lifestyle is casual. I don't think they would want to change it for anything. So it may be that they go to a democratic system and still want to stay some kind of democratic socialism, but we won't know that until it happens, of course.
Well, I'm sure you've probably been asked this before by interviewers and Americans, certainly. I mean, when you went down there and talked, if you talked to folks about Castro, both rural campesinos and the folks who are trying to be more materialistic, capitalistic, or what have you, A, is there a sense of still being afraid of Castro or whoever's keeping him in power? Or do you really just get a general sense people who don't like him feel free to say so, and people who do like him are genuine about it?
I think the latter, that people are, they say what they want. They don't say it loudly. I mean, I wouldn't be in a crowd and ask someone what they thought of Fidel. They wouldn't look at me like I was crazy. So there is that fear in that sense. But I think when you get people, when I spend most of my time walking the streets with my camera, talking to people, trying to get into their homes or their businesses or their schools and just sort of ambling along. So it's lowest common denominator, I like to call it. Mm-hmm. And most of the people are pretty honest and open. They'll say, no, we're tired of this and we want this to change. And others say, you know, I like things the way they are. One man told me he just had heart surgery, and I went to the hospital, and they fixed me up, and he had lived in the States, and I said, would you go back to the States? He said, why would I ever leave this? And he pointed to the sky like it's, you know, I'm in a beautiful place, and, you know, my grandkids are safe, and my kids all have college degrees, and why would I ever want anything different? So when you think about it in that sense, some people are very happy with it.
Would you ever move there?
I would, absolutely, yeah. And someday I hope to be there. I don't think I could live within the system as it is, not on $15 or $20 a month.
Good heavens, is that really what? No.
Yes, oh yeah. Yeah, that's the average wage, I think, is about $20 a month.
All right, well, again, then let's put that into perspective. What is a gallon of milk?
In Cuba, well, they give milk free to kids under, I think, 7 years old to get free milk every day.
Okay.
And that's the majority of the milk goes to the kids. You can buy one somewhere, I'm sure.
Well, what is café con leche? I mean,
well, they would never. Cubans don't go to markets. They have their own markets where things are very cheap.
Oh, okay.
I can have lunch there in the Cuban economy for a quarter or 20 cents or 15 cents if I want to. So I can move into that system. But most people wouldn't even do that. They would eat at home,
right,
or with friends or family or relatives or neighbors. They tend to all share that way. So there's not the nights out, or they all get together at a friend's house and they dance and they listen to music, and they're very social. People are out all the time. The television's so limited. There's only three channels in
are
the evenings.
Government money?
Yes, of course, yeah.
Right.
Cable is illegal, although in Havana almost everyone has cable.
Really?
But
American cable, or is it a Spanish cable?
Well, it comes from satellites, and they have my wife's son is 12 years old, and about a year ago I asked what he wanted when I came down the next time, and he said Cocoa Puffs.
Oh, brother.
And I said, well, the funniest thing I'd ever heard, but they had gotten cable into their apartment, and so now he sees American commercials and all that. So, and he had his one box of Cocoa Puffs, and that was enough. So because of limited television, it's on weekends all day, and it's mostly movies and sports and news. And then the children's broadcasting, of course, because Fidel's big on kids. He's the father of all the children of Cuba, you know.
Oh, right, of course.
So there's,
perhaps literally. No.
Perhaps literally, yes. So people are out and they're social and they're busy. Everyone's busy. The streets are always crowded with people, and except in the heat of the afternoon, of course, it slows down a bit. But so it's an active place. And as I mentioned, arts before. My interest is in the arts. I buy and sell plastic arts and photography to subsidize my travels, and the artists are just amazing, the work they put out, and a lot of that is political and social commentary, and that's
really
pretty free. So it's not what I expected, and I don't think it's what most people expect. The reason I started my website was to show the real Cuba, because I thought that people were not getting a look at what it was like. It was not what I expected. I expected it to be much tougher and grittier.
Right, of course.
And it was not that at all. It was music everywhere. Pretty interesting place, obviously, 40 trips later.
And people aren't starving per se. I mean, I guess every country has a starving contingent. But the folks who have to live on $10 a month are growing their own and somehow making it?
Well, they make it. They are subsidized food-wise. They get their rolls and their rice and a certain amount of meat and some food and some clothes and some shoes. And housing is free. Once you have a house, it's just yours. And
really?
There's no, and if you're on, and there are no homeless to speak of. I'm sure there are some, but you never see them. They're pretty much, everyone's given a home. And if someone leaves or someone dies and there's no one to take over that house, they go to the next person on the list and they say, here's your house and it's yours.
No mortgage, no nothing.
No mortgage, no taxes, no nothing. You have to pay utilities, and they've gone up recently, and that's been a problem, getting pricier for electricity. So in a sense, you can live obviously pretty cheaply because they do it. On the other hand, there's a huge black market and several layers to the economy that don't come in under the system. Everyone has television sets, for example, and if you go to the store, the cheapest television is about $400, and you go, how do all these people have television sets?
Yeah.
And I'm afraid to ask that question.
Oh.
But they all do.
Yeah, because
so.
$400 is actually a lifetime salary.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
Yeah, and they're way more expensive there than here because everything's hard to get there because of the embargo, so things come the long way, so to speak.
And the person you said who had the heart surgery over there, I mean, is there health care? Is there national health?
The doctors are excellent. Health care is free, and education is free through any level. So obviously, if you want to be a doctor, you will be revered and respected. Your education is free. They have a doctor for, I think, every 400 people, and they're all spaced in the communities. And they have doctors. They send doctors all over Africa and Central and South America. They have free education for foreign students in medical school.
Wow.
If they are poor, in fact, the first U.S. student graduated, I think, last year from the Cuban Medical School at no charge.
So do you think if it weren't for the U.S. embargo, it would actually be an ideal system?
Well, it's not an ideal system. I mean, people want economic freedoms, and they don't have that. They have other freedoms, and they have other choices. So it's my biggest complaint is people can't come and go freely. I think if they were allowed to do that, most people would leave and come back and bring things with them that were needed by the economy and by the country, and that would be a good thing. So there's a lot of problems with it, but there's a lot of good in it. So I never condemn it. And, of course, I condemn more of our policy toward Cuba, which I think doesn't help anybody. It hurts the Cuban people, and it strengthens the Cuban government because they blame everything on the embargo. And, you know, and I'm a U.S. citizen, so I can complain about our policy.
Of course.
I'm not a Cuban, so I have nothing to say about theirs. But I think if we change some of our policies, it would strengthen the Cuban people and weaken the Cuban government and eventually lead to a peaceful and change for the better. So, but we don't want to do that. After all these years, I guess we're not going to. Fidel's bound to die before we change. So,
well, that could be very, very
soon. Could be soon, yes. Yeah, no one. My reports from Cuba, from my friends, are all over the board, even they don't know. One doctor friend who's very high up told me that he was fine and should be back in the limelight within a couple weeks, and then someone else said that that Chavez from Venezuela just gave a report saying that he was very critical and might not make it.
Hmm.
So somewhere within those two is the reality of it.
Well, no, it's kind of funny because I remember 5 years ago there were reports about Václav Havel of Czechoslovakia, who seemed to have 25 different things wrong with him.
Right.
And totally on death's door.
Yes.
And now, I don't know, I guess he's writing plays again or something.
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, I much prefer Václav Havel to Fidel Castro, but still.
Yeah, Fidel doesn't write many plays, that's for sure.
No. So,
an interesting figure, you know, a fascinating guy, but I would like to see some things change. But I'd like to see some things stay the same, too. So let's hope they can keep the best of what they have and then make some. The economic changes need to come. They need to allow more of this free enterprise. For instance, people can rent rooms and make small restaurants in their homes for tourists, and it generates quite a bit of money. But the government is so capricious that they will just come and arbitrarily close them from time to time, and so they, you know, they don't give them the opportunity to flourish much.
Well, they're going to mafiaize it, take taxes out, take, you know, their cut, and let the places operate. I mean,
well, you know, something they need that income, and then once Fidel sees another line of income, for instance, from Venezuela, then he wants to cut back on this tourism income because he doesn't like that foreign influence. So rather than accumulating these different layers of economy, he trades one for another, and that's to me is the problem right now.
Is he still so scared of like the outside world at this point?
I don't think it's a fear of the outside world. I think it's just a desire to prove that he is right in his system. And I don't think he's afraid of anything. I think he just wants it to be right, and he thinks he's close enough to making it right that everyone will say, yes, Fidel, you were right. They won't, by the way. But I think I think I mentioned earlier the father figure, and I think that he feels he's the father of all 11 million of those people. And the bad kids he got sent off to the United States, and the good kids can stay. And that seems to be his mentality, and he wants it to work.
Huh.
He's running out of time.
So, you don't have satellite radio, you don't have an iPod, or 100 music channels on your cable. Doesn't matter. Live365.com has dozens of radio stations in all sorts of formats, absolutely free. And one station, DFSX Radio, plays vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By every Saturday night at 11 Eastern Time. I've even put their link on davesgoneby.org. So just click to hear music and talk and me free on DFSX.
Hi, this is Jack Kenny, photographer. You're listening to Dave's Gone By with Dave Lefkowitz on WGBB.
It was just a little while ago, I glued my ears to the radio. The announcer was saying we better beware, crisis was hanging way up in the air. Crawling on the ground, swimming in the sea, dead for me. Well, I didn't know if I was for or against it. He was yelling and screaming a mile a minute. Well, he said, here comes the president, but first this word from Petsident. Have whiter teeth, have cleaner breath when you're facing nuclear death. And then President John began to speak, and I knew right away he wouldn't be weak. Well, he said he'd seen some missile bases and terrible smiles on Cuban faces. Close picture. Carrying land reform too far. Giving land to the USSR. Well, it said we mustn't be afraid. We're setting up a little blockade. Put our ships along the Cuban shores. And if the Russian bear yells and roars, we'll let him have it. From Turkey and Greece, Formosa and Spain, the peaceful West European plain. From Alaska and Greenland, we'll use our means and 20,000 submarines. We're gonna teach the Russians a lesson. We're trying to upset the balance of power. Now most Americans stood behind the president and his military minds. But me, I stood behind a bar, dreaming of a spaceship getaway car. Head for Mars. Any other planet that has bars, like Gertie's whole city. Yes, it seemed the stand was strong in flame, but some Republicans were going insane. And they still are. Well, they said our plan was just 2 miles. Spare the rod and spoil the child. Let's sink Cuba into the sea and give them back democracy under the water. Well, the deadline was set for 10 o'clock. For a Cold War, it was getting hot. Well, the Russians cried, the Russians failed. Homeward bound, those missiles sailed. Mr. Khrushchev said, better red than dead.
We are talking with Jack Kenny, photographer and author photographer of the book Cuba Photos, by Jack Kenny, available through Corazon Press. Have a couple more questions for you, Jack, because sure. It's just so interesting to talk to you about this country that we have these set ideas about and really kind of don't even know. But I also want to talk a bit about your work as a photographer. Now, you did this book, all black and white photos, although if people go to your website, they'll see there are color photos there as well.
Yes.
So why black and white and when do you choose black and white as opposed to color?
Well, my love is black and white, and that's my strong suit. I've always been a black and white photographer. But my first trip to Cuba, when I came back, I realized that I wanted to show the Cuba that was there, so I created my own image bank. Cuba-photo.com is an image bank of 4,000 pictures of Cuba, and they are free use to education.
Wow.
So it's an opportunity, and the only way you can run an image bank is in color these days, unfortunately. So I decided to shoot all color, and then people can print them or use them black and white or color. They were not meant as art pieces. They're just a document of the country of Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And by the turn of the millennium, roughly, the Pope had been to Cuba, and the Elian Gonzalez case brought Cuba to the limelight. CNN opened a center there. And at that time, I decided that my work in that area was sort of coming to an end, and I wanted to switch back to black and white and do what I love, and I was doing exhibits of my work. And then the book came as a result of the, I had a traveling exhibit that went to universities, starting at the University of Michigan in 2001, I think, initially. And that traveled around, and then I had requests for more things, and the book is sort of a result of that, and I stayed with black and white for the book. So it's my work of art. I may do a color book in the future, and it would be just a lighter book like Colorful Cuba or something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are a couple of real interesting photos on the side. There's one of this woman smoking, like, this enormous cigar.
Right.
I mean, it's beyond even phallic because she's,
yes,
like,
yes.
78 years old.
Sure.
But you mentioned, why is she doing that?
Well, at this point, mostly the women that you see that have flowers in their hair and they're doing it for dollars.
Right, but that giant cigar she's smoking is actually...
Sure, that was... And now they're out in the old parts of Havana, and they say, give me a dollar and you can take my picture. Now, most of those that I took, that was sort of prior to that, and they were out, I think, probably looking for money, but I don't pay for photos. I just take pictures of people for other reasons. So, but now, most of those, there are more and more of them, and they're just out there for... It's a tourist attraction at this point.
Right. And you also said on the site that... Basically, if they work in the cigar factories, they can roll their own of any size.
Yeah.
Well,
the woman in the cigar factory is, if that's the one you're referring to, there are several pictures of women with big cigars.
Well.
But she is actually famous and has been in several books, and she just rolls a huge cigar and smokes it all day long, working in the Partagas factory right behind the Capitol.
It's amazing she's lived that long if she's smoking cigars.
It is amazing.
And there's also another...
Well, she's only 21. She just looks 75.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's the wrinkles that you get from the puffing. But another photograph that is probably not quite as popular is, and you didn't even, I think, realize that you quite, what you had when you snapped the picture has to do with a goat.
Oh, yes. That's an interesting story. I was invited to a voodoo ceremony, and they said it's a demonstration ceremony for voodoo. Now, voodoo is not common in Cuba. Santeria is their... is their West African Yoruban faith. Voodoo is more practiced in Haiti and the Dominican Republic, but there are in eastern Cuba, I think a couple thousand practitioners of voodoo. And this was in Havana, and a friend of mine who's with the press said, oh, they're going to have a voodoo ceremony at this pavilion in Havana. And I said, well, I'll go. And I went about 10 at night, and there were no foreigners there. Everyone there was very black, so it seemed to me that it was the voodoo influence in Cuba, which was from the eastern end of the island.
Mm-hmm.
And I expected it to be more open to the public, and it didn't appear to be. But they had this goat, and they were walking around. They bathed him, and they perfumed him. And I was there a couple hours, and I was sitting on the floor right in the front. And I didn't expect them to sacrifice any animals because this is a so-called demonstration. And I was sitting in the dark, and I saw the machetero, the man with the machete, come out and dance. And everyone was dancing and swirling. And my camera batteries were very low. The flash was low. And I took one picture in the dark, and I just happened to catch him just after the machete passed through his neck. So his head is not quite touching the floor, and the machetero is already out of the picture. So there's a goat standing in the middle of the room, headless, on all fours still. I like to say he didn't know he was dead yet. But that's a pretty interesting photo. It's got a lot of comments.
Yeah, I can imagine. And what was the purpose of that ceremony? I mean, even if it was a demonstration, but let's say it wasn't. Let's say there was an actual real voodoo. I mean, what the hell?
Well, those were sacrifices. They sacrificed chickens and goats, and that's standard in Santeria and in voodoo.
Yeah.
And voodoo.
No, but I mean, even the dancing and everything. Were they trying to bring rain? Were they just
Or? All the different, there are several different gods, and they're based on, I'm not big on my Santeria, but there are several Chango and Yemaya and all the different gods, and they all relate to different things. They're gods of the sea and of the mountains and of rain, and they have birthdays, and it's usually on one of those birthdays that they will pay homage to that god, and everyone has their own, for instance, Chango, I'm told by several Cubans, is my saint. So on his birthday, which is in December, I would, if I were a practitioner, I would have a party in his name, and you sacrifice to that god, and sacrifices are chickens and goats. So this was part of a sacrifice to one of the gods of voodoo. And honoring him, and then they cook him and they eat him. I mean, by morning he's breakfast.
Was that the strangest experience you had?
I've been to Santeria ceremonies, although that was the first goat sacrifice, so that was pretty unusual.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, It's just part of it's so much a part of the Cuban culture. Almost every house, if you walk in the door, will have maybe a glass of water next to the door as an homage to their saint. And it's almost every house, even the Catholics that I know and people who don't proclaim any affiliation with Santeria seem to have maybe a cigar by the door or something by the door. On their shelf, there'll be an homage to one of the saints. So
I can't imagine what saint smokes a cigar.
All of them.
St. Aloysius is walking around and is like, God, I could use a smoke.
In Cuba,
oh, there's one.
Yeah.
And for the last question to Jack Kenny, photographer, what is the most precious experience or most memorable experience that you've had in all your trips to Cuba?
Well, a singular experience I don't think I can pinpoint. It's been the people right from the start. And if you see my book, you'll see it's people. I don't spend much time on architecture and old cars like most of the books on Cuba. And of course, once I met Nyurka, who I married recently, she was a huge influence and has been great in my life. And she's a hard-working woman, works in a shoe factory all night long for her $10 a month, and she's proud and strong, and so she's a big part of it. But my daughter also goes to Cuba. She's a senior at Eastern Michigan University, and she has been 15 or 16 times.
Well, actually, you know what? Let me bring that back, though. Nyurka now, I guess, lives with you in America.
No, she's still in Cuba.
She's still in Cuba.
It will be a while.
Wow, you really got to marry her and leave her there. That's like if American men could do that, we would take that system, man. No, I'm kidding. But no, I was going to say, what kind of culture shock would she have had?
Well, in the future, she's going to come here. We think actually the Cubans are she can be released very quickly on that end. But on the U.S. side now, I've already applied to Homeland Security, and that will take about 3 months. And another 3 to 5 months on immigration before they will let her come. So it will be sometime next year. And she doesn't know if she wants to live here or not. She's never been out of Cuba, and I told her it's her choice. She will come and visit and make that decision after she's here.
And actually, by the way, where do you live?
I live in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
So it's not like you're even in Florida just taking the boat over.
I drive to Toronto to travel to Cuba. I travel out of Toronto.
Man, you must pack all sorts of clothes for every trip.
Well, I take a lot more down than I do coming back.
Yeah.
All my friends want something, and once you start going to Cuba, you take stuff for everybody. And then all my friends here that know people in Cuba ask me to take things for them. So,
is it still illegal to bring in the cigars?
Yes, it is, yeah. Initially, with the university licenses that I had a few years ago, you could bring 2 boxes in. But now they stopped that. And the general license, which I travel under now, I can't bring anything in except art and reference materials are all legal, but nothing else. No cigars, nothing else, actually.
Uh-huh. Well, you were able to smuggle them in bottles of hair gel, and now even that you can't do.
Yeah, that's done now, too.
Oh, well. Yeah. But, Jack Kenny, it has been just wonderful and really fascinating talking to you. Just please remind people, A, what the book is and where they can get it.
The book is Cuba, Photographs by Jack Kenny. The publisher is Corazon Press. Corazon, CortisonePress.com. You can order direct from them, or it's also on Amazon.com and at select bookstores.
And just remind them where they can see your photographs, your own website again.
Cuba-photo.com has 4,000 pictures in color and some of the black and white, and the Corazon Press has several large versions of black and white to give a good representation of the book.
Well, Jack, Cuba is libraying with you. on this program.
Well, it's a pleasure to be able to talk about my favorite place and share it with everybody else.
Thanks so much.
All right, Dave. Thank you.
You don't have to pay big bucks on Broadway to enjoy a funny play. You could sit in the comfort of your living room or bedroom and read a whole book of hilarious comedies by the one and only me, Dave Lefkowitz, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, filled with my unique satire and spoofery. If you like my show, you love my book. $20 hardcover, $12 soft. Buy it at davesgoneby.org. Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. Says it all, doesn't it?
Broadway the hard way, ladies and gentlemen. Broadway the hard way.
Genius that he was, I guess Frank Zappa never heard of Performing Arts Insider because they do Broadway the easy way. They include so much information about every Broadway show, off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and dance. It's easy to find all you want to know about theater in New York in Performing Arts Insider. 21 times a year in your mailbox with 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. Call 516-295-1511, 516-295-1511, or visit PerformingArtsInsider.com. It's not Broadway the hard way, it's Broadway the best way. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, something very special, kind of a change of pace for us, but I think pretty extraordinary and important. Back in 1996, a young Colorado girl, just 6 years old, was found dead in the basement of her house. Her death was brutal and presumably murder. Suspicion pointed to her parents, especially because the girl was already being pushed into the beauty pageant circuit. She was dressed to look nearly three times her age and sometimes acted that way to boot. But with no solid evidence, no charges were filed. And for nearly a decade, the case turned cold. Until last week, when John Mark Carr, an expatriate American living in Thailand, confessed to the murder of Jean-Benet Ramsey. Now, there are holes in his confession, which prosecutors are investigating, but at the very least, it's a remarkable twist in a story that continues to grip the American psyche. That's why I'm excited and amazed to have my next guest on the program. To my knowledge, this is an exclusive. She hasn't done any other media thus far. And I'm not even sure the microphones can pick her up, but we will do our best. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Dave's Gone By the ghost of Jean-Benet Ramsey. Jean-Benet, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave.
First of all, how are you?
I'm dead. Didn't you get the memo?
Yes, I realize.
No, I'm kidding. I'm fine. Happy to be here.
Now, I'm not sure how this works. Is 10 years ago, when you were killed, you were 6 years old. Are you still six, or are you now 16?
I'm six and 16. Time moves differently in the spirit world. I'm six, I'm 96, I'm 506.
Wow, isn't that confusing?
Sometimes, but I wear a strong diaper, so I have it covered.
Did you go to heaven?
There's no such thing as heaven or hell in the afterlife.
Really?
There's a Kmart, though, and a Home Depot, and three Starbucks. Actually, I guess that is hell.
Okay, let's roll back the clock. It's Christmas in Colorado, 1996. There's a tree, there's music, presents. All the family is gathered around. What happened?
Well, Mommy asked me to go to the basement to bring up more tinsel for the tree. And when I was down there, I saw this strange man. I said, hey, and he said, hey. And that's the last I remember.
Oh, you don't have any memory of that night? You don't recall that you were sexually assaulted, bashed in the head, and then strangled?
If you were me, would you want to remember that?
Well, no, but I figure since you're above it all now...
Nope, sorry, blocked it all out. Still, I remember who won the Nuggets game that night.
Well, that's hardly... Okay, so you don't recall the actual murder, but you did know there was a strange man in your basement. Why didn't you just run up the stairs?
Well, I didn't know he was a bad man. He seemed friendly until he picked up the bowling ball and the wrench.
Tell me, Jean-Benet, have you seen the recent news stories? Last week, John Mark Carr was arrested in Thailand on unrelated charges, but he confessed to killing you.
Yes, I saw that.
Was he the man in your basement that night?
Could be. It all happened so fast, I really can't be sure.
Well, was the guy you saw tall and stocky like Nick Nolte, or small and nerdy like Gary Newman?
Well, I think he was short and handsome, like you.
Well, that's very kind.
Don't mention it, cutie pie.
Now, hold on. This is a bit creepy, because it gets into your behavior in the year leading up to your killing. One reason your mom and dad were such prime suspects is because they seemed to age you prematurely. They would send you out to beauty pageants and Miss Preteen 1995, Miss Prepubescent Colorado.
Oh, that was all fun.
maybe, but we've all seen the videos. You are parading around in full makeup with tardy regalia. You were a six-year-old dressed up like a burlesque hooker.
Yes, yes, you got that.
I'm sorry? Burlesque hooker was the look we were going for.
Daddy said it came off more like New Orleans Madam, and Auntie Clara said I looked like a midget drag queen. It was the red dress. I knew it should have been more burgundy or bright orange.
Okay, whatever, but don't you think it was inappropriate at that age to be dressing up and sashaying like that?
Well, it's not as if I was going to get a chance to do it later on, was I?
Okay, that's a good point, but do you think your parents made a mistake putting you out there like that, sexualized, objectified?
It's not like I was a virgin.
What?
I had some experience, you know, in the hay,
but you were six.
Six and a half?
I don't care if you were 16 and a half.
Oh, Dave, you're so naive. Children grow up so quickly these days. If you don't have oral sex by the time you're three, you'll get laughed right off the playground.
Oh, my God.
Now, don't think I was some kind of slut or anything. I waited till I was five to go all the way. Wait, does anal count?
Yes, it does.
Okay, four and a half. Well, who did you... How were you... Oh, who didn't I? Judges, school custodians, freshmen, seniors, first graders.
Well, what on earth were you trying to prove by having sex that young?
You mean, besides the elasticity of my vagina?
Yes.
Well, sex is everywhere on the earth. On TV, in movies, beauty pageants, clothing stores. I figured everybody does it sooner or later. I might as well do it as soon as possible.
But did your parents know about this?
Well, I think they suspected when I started getting roses and perfume from a secret admirer. But I just told them it was a gift from one of the sponsors.
And they believed you?
Oh, it was true. It was one of the sponsors. One of the many sponsors who added 9 centimeters to my anus.
This is so horrifying, but now that you have seen John Mark Carr, what do you think of him?
Well, not much since he killed me. Duh!
Well, yeah, they're still investigating that, but assuming he did the murder, do you think he should get the death penalty?
Absolutely! He took away the best years that lay ahead of me.
That's right. You never made it to college, for a career, marriage.
Oh, forget that. I'm talking 9 to 14. After that, it's all downhill.
Well, by the way, I forgot to offer my condolences. I assume you know your mother died of cancer in June.
Yes, Dave, I saw her.
You mean on TV?
No, in the spirit world.
Oh, right, because you're both... Well, how's she doing?
She's a little cheesed off at me because I'm still not as skinny as Nicole Richie.
Are you saying looks matter even when you're a ghost?
Oh, of course, that don't change. Look at poor Casper.
Casper the friendly ghost?
Well, he used to be Casper the friendly ghost. Now he's Casper the fat-ass ghost with man boobs. He really let himself go.
Jean-Marie, while she was alive, your mom lived under a cloud of suspicion. She suffered the loss of a daughter, and I'm sure it was a strain on her marriage. Why did you wait 10 years to suddenly appear and tell your side of the story?
No one asked.
You were waiting to be asked?
Well, I nearly did Montel with that psychic hag, but they dumped me at the last minute for a woman with 3 kids dying in a boat accident. Bitch!
Jean-Marie, we kind of need to wrap the interview up. Is there anything you would like to say to John Carr, or whoever the monster might be?
Well, sure. I'm still angry. I still have issues, as my nursery school teacher used to say. But the joke is on my killer, because he got me when I was only 6. So he could have had 10 years of amazing sex with a blossoming blonde babe. Instead, all he got was a murder rap and a venereal disease.
You had DD?
Oh, yeah, since I was 1. It's not what you think. I got it from a toilet seat.
A toilet seat? Come on. No, it's true. And you want to hear the funny part? It was a toilet seat at our church.
You got gonorrhea from a church toilet seat?
Oh, first of all, how do you know? Oh, easy. After my christening, three priests gangbanged me in the crapper.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have been speaking to the ghost of Jean-Benet Ramsey. Now, Miss Ramsey, I wish you best of luck in the afterlife. I hope they catch your killer, if they haven't already. I hope you and your mom reconnect.
Well, thank you, Dave. And it's been a pleasure doing your show. I was going to go on Howard Stern, but he just wanted me for Dead Lesbian Dynamite.
Oh, that's really bad taste.
You ain't kidding. You think live lesbians taste like fish. You should try a dead one.
I think I'll pass, but are you doing any other radio?
Yes, I was going to do that other ghost.
Ghost?
Yeah, you know, the dead guy. He's all decayed and deformed and decomposing.
What? Oh, Don Imus. Well, thank you again, Jean-Benet Ramsey, for stopping in. We'll be back with more Dave's Gone By right after this.
180 plus. That's how many episodes we've done so far of Dave's Gone By. And nearly every one is preserved lovingly, almost sexually, on compact disc. So you can buy as many episodes as you like. CDs are $11 a piece, including shipping and handling. See davesgoneby.org for the show's whole history and how to pick and choose the episodes for you. Great radio like Dave's Gone By doesn't grow on trees, but it does get saved on CDs.
Hi, I'm Felix the Copycat, and I like to prowl around Hewlett Minuteman Press because they make the best copies out of anybody. Oh, this is just the dumbest ad I can possibly imagine. But really, Hewlett Minuteman Press, they do copies, they do binding, they do laminations. Anything you want, they do it at a fair price and quickly. Hewlett Minuteman Press on Broadway in Hewlett, right next to the Lowman's Shoe Store, 516-569-5577. Meow!
Meow, indeed. We are back, live with Dave's Gone By. I want to thank a bunch of people. First of all, thank you so much to my co-host who just coughed there, Jeff Goodman. Thanks so much for stopping by today, Jeff.
You are most welcome.
Thank you to my wonderful special guests, Jack Kenny. Please get his book, Cuba, from CorazonPress.com. And we'll be hearing actually a little Cuban music to go out with Joe Cuba Sextet doing Push, Push, Push. He wasn't actually, his name was Calderon. But he did Afro-Cuban music and was actually quite crossover popular for a few years here.
Kind of like the Kinsey Six?
Kind of like the Kinsey Six, only macho and male. You know, bang, bang, although the songs could go either way. Push, 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 and the most famous one was Bang, Bang. So that will tell you a little something about, you know, what was sublimated in their music. And also thank you, of course, to the ghost of Jean-Benet Ramsey, who was really, you know, very forthcoming and outgoing in her answers. I thought that was cool. Gotta thank sponsors, as always, Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine.
And MortgagesRock.com.
Yes, and Hewlett Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings of Broadway. I have links to all these sponsors on the davesgoneby.org website. Click there, use them. Don't forget that if you go to Minuteman or if you order Performing Arts Insider Magazine by subscription, each of those places gives our listeners 10%. Off the
big, big discounts.
Hey, 10%. It's, you know,
I'm saying it's
90
big,
cents on a dollar.
Big discount.
There you go. And hey, since you're with me, why don't you give a little plug for Fancy Schmancy Balloons?
Oh, yes, Fancy Schmancy Balloons. Go there for all your party decorating needs. 516-797-3229.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
That would be 516-797-3229. And just in case you want to know, two Super Bowls ago, the final score was 32-29.
Uh-huh, so
and as I was watching the Super Bowl, I said, I know those numbers from somewhere.
And it didn't strike until 4 weeks later.
Yeah, it's the fancy schmancy number, 3229 with 797 before it.
Okay, a couple of other thank yous that I want to get to. First of all, thank you, as ever, as always, to my loving and darling and wonderful wife, Joyce.
Love her.
Love. Isn't she wonderful? Isn't she the best?
She's the best.
Thank you to Tom Ross, program director, just back from vacation, and was nice enough to bring me some sticky jam, the edible kind. Jeff's eyes lit up, and then he's like, wait a minute.
No, they didn't.
No, they didn't. I'm lying. But thank you very much, Tom. It was really, really nice of you. Sad stuff. Also got to get to condolences to a couple of folks. First of all, spent the early part of the afternoon, didn't have time to really stay with them, but we finally had, it's not exactly a funeral, but a memorial kind of half party, half service for my cousin, who died a few weeks ago out in California. Bunch of the family came in, like 70 people, to my aunt's house. So got to hobnob with them a little bit and to talk with her, her widower, actually, Greg, who's bearing up pretty well. So it was really nice to see him and talk to him and hope that he'll stay in touch.
Well, best wishes to Greg.
Absolutely. And best
and
wishes.
And the rest of the family.
And thank you, man. And thanks and condolences to George Navrotis, who was a good friend and helped set up the original Total Theater website. George has been working mostly in the Dominican Republic the past few years. George's father died this past week, Nikitas Navrotis. So blessings and good wishes to him. Want to give a couple of guest alerts before the gospel people come in. I can see them coming through the door. First of all, Greg Allen, who was, of course, the original neo-futurist, the folks who do Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind, both in Chicago and here. He's doing two shows in town the last 2 weeks of August at the New York International Fringe Festival. He'll be bringing back the complete lost works of Samuel Beckett as found in an envelope partially burned in a dustbin in Paris labeled Never to be Performed, Never, Ever, Ever, or I'll Sue from the Grave. That's the whole title. And it's a pretty funny show.
And they're performing it.
They are doing it again. It's worth catching. So do see it at the Village Theater. It's only $15. Go to fringenyc.org. And
they have lots of great shows at fringenyc.org, too.
Have you seen any in this particular...
Not yet, but I will be next week.
Cool. I think I'm going to see one, too. I know Billy the Mime is playing, and I'm desperate to see him. Because we were talking before about The Aristocrats, and he's absolutely hysterical and brilliant on it. So I'm going to try and fit him in.
They're always little gems. And it's $15 a show. You cannot go wrong.
Exactly. And also, don't forget, if you haven't seen Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind, it's been playing in Chicago for about 12 years. There's a a New York cast that's been doing it at the Crane Theater on the weekends on East 4th Street. Well, Greg Allen, who created that show out in Chicago, is going to be joining that cast for the last 2 weeks of August. So go see that. New York, their website is nyneofuturists.org. Okay, next week, got to get out of here. We're running a little late. But I want to tell everybody that next week, we've got sort of an old home week here for WGBB, because Jimmy, Anthony, and Robin from Indecent Exposure Radio are coming. Now, these names might ring a little bit of a bell, because Jimmy and Robin were doing a show on WGBB for about a year or two. First it was called the Mikey and Jimmy Show, then it was the Jimmy and Robin Show, because Mikey took a powder, and now I guess they've added a guy named Anthony, but they found their niche. They're doing stuff on WVOX all the way out in New Rochelle.
But that would be the Big Box.
The Big Box from New Rochelle, listenable on the web. So they're cool guys, and they're really trying to make it in the business. They're out there. You know, he went to the Connecticut School of Broadcasting. They're trying to do their thing. So I'm going to give them a leg up, and they've always been good to the show.
Unlike you, who's really not trying to make it.
Going nowhere. I'm just, just going to shoot myself after the show's over. Anyway, check them out at IndecentExposureRadio.com. IndecentExposureRadio.com. They'll be here next week, next Sunday at 11, for the 186th edition of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz saying good night, buenas noches, and
gone bye-bye.